So welcome to the Thesis Talks, and we're here today with Mess. Welcome, Mess.
Thank you so much, and I'm glad to be here. Glad you asked me.
Maybe can we start with your topic? So what did you write about?
Yes, so my topic was about a neurofeedback clinic, and I will come back to what neurofeedback clinic is. In the US that I met some time ago here on a workshop, and they had a problem of scaling what they're doing, because what they are doing is clinical processes where they need to do one-on-one consultations. These are not necessarily complex in the sense that you don't know what you're working with. They're complex because there's a lot of data. So he wanted to find a way to scale this. So I looked at how you could get his expert knowledge into big data.
Maybe already the first main question that we have was what was your motivation? I mean, now you already said you were in contact with them before through a workshop, but why that topic? Why this industry?
Yeah. So going back, the brain is a huge interest for me, and this topic was super, super interesting as I dig deeper into it. And then I have in my work on the side, now my full-time work, I work with robot optimization. So this idea of combining that aspect of putting processes into automated computerized processes, and also looking at knowledge, how can we convert it and all that. That was very, very interesting to me. And then the brain is just a topic that I'm super interested in because it's so complex. And then again, it is our most valuable weapon, if you can call it that, because people can do so much with it that they don't realize. I myself has changed my brain a lot in the last year. That I can see from different scans.
In what way?
If we go deep, and then I'm gonna go back to actually what he's doing. So what you do when you go to his consultation is that you will get something that looks like a swimming cap on that has like 16, 18 electrodes connected to your brain. And these are then measuring your moment-to-moment electricity of your brain. That is then something that they will cut down. They're measuring for more or less 5 minutes, cutting it down to 1 minute of clean recording for eyes closed and eyes opened. And then they have a pretty good idea of how your brain is functioning in a a controlled environment. So there are these restrictions. You're not allowed to meditate. You're not allowed to have caffeine within 16 hours. You cannot have nicotine within 2 hours. You cannot have been on psychostimulants within 2 days. So there are some things that they're doing to make sure that you're somewhat replicable or standardized in comparison to the rest of the database. This knowledge they don't then compare to their stratified database, that is a database of a lot of people that should be somewhat normalized. And from that, they can say you have too much of this specific electricity in your brain. So you have delta waves, that is from 0 to 6 hertz. And that is kind of your sleep state.
Yeah.
And then you have it's low alpha, that is from around 7 to 12. And that is slow thinking processing speed. Then you have high or normal alpha, that is from 13 to 19, I think. And that is the point where we usually say you want to be, because that's like a bit of the higher thinking processing speed, so that's where you do a lot of your cognitive work and get your ability to focus on something. And then I think it's beta, that is like 20 to 26 or 7, and that's a bit noise. It's going to move a bit fast in your brain. And then you go to theta, where it's really fast, and that's usually if you have ADHD, you have a lot of theta because your brain is just constantly running and you don't have a mechanism to shut it down again. And then you have a final one that's called gamma that we don't talk about a lot, but that's what they say Zen masters and Buddhist priests and things like that go into.
Oh.
And that's up around 40.
And you try to get there with your brain?
I think I've been there, like most people have probably, but it's not something, unless you really train it, it's very difficult to do consciously. And a lot of people will say, unless you train it, you will not feel comfortable if you're there. It's too fast.
Okay.
So it's really... And in that sense, they can kind of figure out where you are, of course, but you can also connect a lot of these brain waves to transcendental stages and things like that. So you can actually put something into people if you wanted to. Because the next stage after you have this picture of the brain is you then say, so these are your imbalances. For me, my theta was a bit high, my alpha was a bit low. That means I was easily distracted and I might not process as fast as I wanted to. Half a year later, I have almost normalized both of them and I can feel a really big difference in my energy levels.
And how did you do that? Magic.
This one was actually not with his devices. I'm going to do that at some point, but I didn't have access to it. So a lot of really focused meditation. And then I did a lot on my deep sleep because some of it was an effect of not getting enough deep sleep. And that then a lot of this really, really strictly through half a year to a year. And next time I recorded, it was a lot better and I was even jet lagged. So he also said that this could even be better at the actual result. So if you're doing it the way he suggests, that is a lot quicker and better if you're not always already in a state where you can do this, is that you put an electrode on a specific part of your brain. And this, they know from your recording, is a bit of a trouble area. And then they can say, this place has too much theta or has too little alpha. And they can train your brain here by saying, this is what you're doing right now. And whenever you are getting into a range that we like, you get a reward in sound or picture or something like that. So actually, a lot of these other brain stimulants or whatever you do, you take something in or you put electrical impulses to your brain. This is just measuring and then rewarding. So actually, you can do it whenever you want almost. You need a computer that is connected to this. And then you need to be able to hear the signals. You can have a conversation with someone as long as your brain can hear the signals coming up. You can stand reading, you can do work. A lot of people say that they're doing like the GMAT or these really, really tough tests. They can take in almost 20 to 30% more knowledge while doing this because your brain is just being probed to be in a super, super focused state.
So basically what he's doing, he's trying to, because obviously none of these people, I guess, are sick that he's...
It depends.
Okay, but yeah. I mean, you were not sick.
No, I am in that segment that's probably... growing, but shouldn't be his primary focus. His primary focus would be more in the sick care, like post-traumatic stress, brain injuries, ADHD, ADD. The problem for him, they don't have a lot of money necessarily if you have these conditions. And governments are not really accepting this process yet of doing it, even though it is probably the only one that actually works for getting rid of these things. But that is the problem, you get rid of the things. So you suddenly lose your medicinal businesses and things like that if people are actually getting rid of their things. Some of them might still need medicine, but most of them are actually getting off it. So
the pharma industry again. Huh?
There is something there, definitely. Yeah, so recently the TV2 lorry made a miniseries on some of these different technologies, and they had this specific in with a case from a, 16-year-old girl that had epilepsy. And within 3-4 months of doing this, she was almost able to live like a normalized life from not being able to do anything.
Crazy. So basically then your body is able to heal itself, right? Because there's nothing going into your brain, as I understood. It's just measuring.
Yeah. You're measuring and then rewarding when you do the right thing, because that's kind of what has happened to us while we're growing up, that we get these reward signals constantly from the world around us. And if that world is wanting you to be active or don't really care about you, or let's say that your parents don't give you attention unless you are annoying and loud and super hyperactive, then your brain might see, oh, this is the way I should react. And then you code yourself into believing that the way to work is actually super, super high intensity. Where for others, it might be the complete opposite, that your brain wants you to be super introvert constantly and never talk with anyone because that's where it found reward in the recent or as you grew up. So this is kind of correcting you back onto a track. It will not necessarily, you could change completely who you are, but that would not be healthy for you. So one of the guys I talked with, he is also working with the clinic. He did one short experiments, one session, where he just said the founder that now we're gonna trigger your anxiety or trigger a protocol that won't be good for you. And he was like, yeah, sure. Let's see what's gonna happen. And after that, he was had anxiety the rest of the day. He was just walking around, super touching his own body, and everything was just incredibly scary. And he was really amazed of how bad it can go if you do this wrong. And of course, your brain is clever. If you only do it once, it will just correct itself back. But if you do it enough, you would actually change your brain completely into living in anxiety or living in stress. So you could do it exactly the wrong way.
Maybe we can dive into your findings, and I think you already said a few things here and there. But what did you find out, or what was the conclusion of your...
In the work, I looked a lot on tacit knowledge, which is this knowledge that we cannot explain. So if you somebody asks you how do you ride a bike, you probably cannot say how, besides that you sit on it and pedal, and then they say, but how do you keep balance? And you're like, I don't know, my body does it. That is related to this tacit knowledge that we can't really explain, but our body knows how to do it. And then a lot of people have a conflict here on tacit to explicit knowledge. Explicit is the thing we can actually explain. So my thesis went into looking at tacit knowledge, dividing it into three, that is relational, somatic, and collective tacit knowledge. They were already mentioned by another expert in it. And these are the relational are the things that is actually pretty easy to make explicit, but just haven't been. So let's say a warehouse manager. He knows where everything is in a storage, and that's tacit knowledge, until the day that they put it into a database or into a program. Then it would be explicit knowledge for everyone. Then you have the somatic, that is the knowledge that you might be able to explain, like, or you might be able to, that's where I got in, like outsource, because that's how I looked at it. It hadn't really been looked a lot on that before. And this could be playing chess, or the new of playing Go, or maybe riding a bike or something like that. And then you have the collective, that is like rule of societies, where you just, even people don't understand these. Like you come to some country and you're completely lost.
Mm.
Or you don't know how people speak or why they say as they do, because there are some hidden rules of society, and that can be slang or whatever. So that is like the last level of it, where you say computers might not be able to do this for the next many years. If we get general artificial intelligence, they will probably be able to. So my thesis worked a lot on the middle one, that is the somatic, and looking at if this could be outsourced. And from this specific case, there is a lot of evidence suggesting that it can.
Can we take riding a bike as an example? Because I really don't understand how you mean structured approach. What exactly are they doing?
So if you say riding a bike, you would say like our start is that you don't know how to ride a bike, and our goal is that you know how to ride a bike. And then in between, there's a lot of way to get there. For a human, it would be put yourself on the bike and try. But if you wanted this to go to a computer, you'd probably go back to that equation someone has made on how do you actually keep balance? What is the counterbalancing mechanism? Because that would suddenly make sense for a computer. But that's also mean by having this equation, you can start playing with actually teaching this to a computer or to a robot. Because you have the parameters to work with, and you can measure them as they go along and slowly get it into the right sense. Where for a human, you would never calculate these things. You would just try it and then see, okay, this actually went wrong, and you probably wouldn't even put that rationalism on it. You would just try again and try again and try again until you actually get it.
Hmm. So basically, so your finding is that we can extract this somatic knowledge into a database and then teach it to robots, for example.
Yes, then the next part of it that I didn't get too much into is like, then how do we use this? I made some hypotheses and propositions, a bit of what the clinic have said and some of what I see could work. And some of them is just in the initial phase. If you get this data processed by a computer, you can also start making visualizations, so you can have an app where you, even before you have your consultations, can see, okay, this is what they suggest I should know, or what would be the features for me. So when you actually have the consultations, you can be a lot more specific and direct on, so this says this, I don't agree, or this says this, can you explain me more about what that means? right now they use 45 minutes on consultation, and as people get to know this more and more, they can use 15 or 20 minutes on it. So they hope to do that. And then the side I put up as an extra proposition is the training aspect. They of course saw the training for an algorithm, but if you look at when you start outsourcing knowledge, there's the huge problem that you lose your ability to actually connect with this knowledge. So I saw it as they needed to make a loop and say the knowledge that they outsource both have to train the algorithm but also new clinicians. So it's kind of a training mechanism for two sides. And by doing that, whenever they train the clinicians, they will also be able to get new data here from the clinicians, what they do wrong, what they do right, that they can train the algorithm with as well. So they will constantly be producing new knowledge from that training. So that was the like propositions of how they could use this to as a growth tool, but there's a lot of conditional things in it. And there's a huge aspect that now they worked on it for almost a year and they're still only setting it up.
Okay.
So it's not a quick fix. Yeah.
Maybe because you were super interested in this topic since a while now, you said, what will be next? What is next to research or what is next for you? Maybe do you want to continue working on this?
Next for them or next if you were to continue the research would be looking more at how is it then actually in the full scope? I was only able to see like the implementation scope and the initial scope. It would be very interesting to get the implemented scope. And that would be very interesting also, of course, for the academic side of it to start being able to say this could potentially increase your performance by 20% or something like that.
Yeah.
So that
and
would
then tweak it maybe a little bit here and there and,
exactly.
and try to
yeah.
maybe develop a framework.
Yeah.
When you said that you tested it out and you try to improve your brain. Do you think if we continuously do that, that we will turn into superhumans?
I think at some point they might be able to do something here, but there is the aspect of, you can of course change the way your brain works, so you can be a super version of yourself, but you have like your working memory and different people have different working memory slots. And usually you connect that to your IQ. So for each extra memory slot you have, or working memory slot, typically people will move up like one standard deviation in the IQ. So that means super, super high functioning people will usually have around 9 or 10, where pretty low IQ, you'll be lower around 5, and the normal value is around 7. So that's also why you sometimes hear people say we can only work with 7 different things at the same time before we are completely losing it. That will be difficult to change, but you would be able to say, so how can I make the best version of myself?
Yeah, I'm excited what we'll, maybe in 5 years, we will all go to our brain specialist once in a while. Who knows?
I actually think it's going to be more like a fitness model.
Or like a fitness model, yeah.
That
you go to the gym, to the brain gym.
Exactly. Like I don't think it's going to be long until you see some of these things in gyms. It needs to be a little bit more easy to digest. But when that happens, I think you might actually start seeing gyms as some of the first to implement this, because it's really like already kind of in the same idea that you are going in and training yourself.
Crazy. Okay, so the future is ahead. The brain future.
It is very likely that we'll see more of it, but
yeah.
It also depends on lobbyism, how much people are allowing this to grow. Not long ago, Google made a restriction to all alternative medicine and alternative processes that hasn't been well researched, that they will not show up anymore in the search engine. So they just cut off all these alternative medicine things because as they like said about it, they don't want to give bad knowledge to people, and some of it might be bad, but they, instead of having an algorithm looking at somewhat validating it, they just cut all of it.
Yeah, very interesting. Thank you for sharing your knowledge on that and painting this very interesting future image of our brain.
And thank you again for having me.